Welcome back to another episode of Indie Darlings, the podcast where we discuss indie films. Today, I have a guest and a good friend, Joan Ford.
Hey, Connie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here.
Joan is a very talented writer and comedian. And I want to say you have an encyclopedic knowledge of all pop culture, films, nerd culture.
Ooh, that's like a lot. And I think I have encyclopedic knowledge about certain nooks and crannies of it. Not all. There are big swaths of like pop culture that you could probably best me on pretty easy.
But it's just that like I feel like very rarely, like normally when I do the game of, oh, this person was also in this, this, and this, I can only do that with some actors, some directors, but you can do that with editors, sound mixers.
Oh, I could probably do that with some of that. Yeah, sure. I could tell you everything. I'm like Dean Cundey photographed.
Oh my God. Who's what? That?
Dean Cundey was a, I think he's still alive. He was a cinematographer who did a lot of, now I'm just going to screw it up. But I think he did a lot of very like cool movies in the 80s and 90s. Like the one I always think about, it was Dick Tracy. He did the cinematography of Dick Tracy, which I think is like one of the most beautifully shot comic book movies of all time. Like that movie, like just captures the look of that comic so specifically in a way that I think very few other directors and cinematographers have captured. Mm-hmm. Like even like, I love the look of like Tim Burton's Batman, but it's kind of like going into his own like
gothic.
Yeah,
it doesn't look like the comics.
Exactly. So yeah, I'll tell you. So there you go.
But we're not here to discuss Dick Tracy.
No, that's not an indie movie.
Hell no.
It's a Disney movie.
Oh my God, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Mm. Wow. Oh, wow. Okay. The film that we're discussing today is the 1998 film, The Last Days of Disco. And Joan, you chose this film.
I did choose this film.
Why did you choose this film?
This has just been a favorite movie of mine for a while. It's something I come back to and watch a lot. There's a lot of stuff I love about it, but I think at its core, it's just like a good hangout movie. Uh-huh. I feel like... I'm taking this phrase from Quentin Tarantino, and he described Jackie Brown as his like hangout movie. You come back to it not so much because of, you know, of the story, but because like you like the characters, you like spending time with the characters, so you go back to the movie to like hang out with the characters, and that's what kind of like draws me back to this movie again and again. Is like I like spending time with these characters and this like very kind of specific version of, you know, late 70s, early 80s disco scene in New York City.
Okay. Yeah. Cause this is a very specific time. Okay. So this movie takes place, it starts off in the early 80s in New York City. And it's about a group of people who all kind of know each other from college.
Yes.
And
which is very Witt Stillman. That's what he likes to write about. People who know each other from college. Yeah. Or just like kind of, he writes a lot about upper middle class, like kind of like doofuses.
Yeah. The director is also the writer, Witt Stillman. Mm-hmm. And he, I don't know, was this movie, it felt the dialogue, didn't it feel like a book?
Oh yeah. He was definitely compared to, and still is, to a lot of like, to authors like kind of like authors like Jane Austen, or just like, he's very witty. He's very like urbane. It almost feels like you're watching like a Truman Capote wrote all the dialogue or something
It very much felt like, at first I was like, was this based on a play? And then I was like, no, it feels like I'm watching a book.
Yeah. He's very like, at least in his dialogue, like very like literary minded, which is like makes sense. Is like, that's kind of the world we're in. Like the two main characters are
they're book editors.
Aspiring to book editors. Yeah.
Okay. So this has Chloe Sevigny, Kate Beckinsale, 90s favorite Robert Sean Leonard, Matt Ross, and those are the most, I want to say, notable.
Yes. And I think, how do you say it? Chris, I can never pronounce this guy's name. It's Chris Eigman or Chris.
Did he play Des?
He's Des, yeah.
Des, he did a really good job.
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's kind of like, with at least back for his like 90s movies, he was like with Stillman's like go to. I think he's in all his movies. And yeah, he's great in this. He's kind of like one of those like quintessential like indie 90s actors that has like disappeared. Not so much disappeared, but you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, he was like he and Whit Stillman are very like much part of that scene, especially because we're like, you know, we're talking about like 90s indie movies, like Eigman and Stillman are like a duo you got to discuss.
I'm looking at an Eigman right now on IMDb. But yeah, okay, so this felt like I was watching a book.
Yeah.
I've never seen this movie before. I only heard of it by seeing the cover for it in video stores.
Yeah.
And this was like right. I became aware of Chloe Sevigny after the movie Boys Don't Cry.
Sure.
And then that led me to this, but I just never got around to watching this.
Yeah.
She made this right after Kids.
Yeah. In fact, I was listening to, just to get prepped for this, I was listening to the commentary track today, and it was like, this is what, I think it was the cinematographer editor for this was also worked on Kids. And when Stillman was Stillman was looking for his Alice, he cast someone, didn't get her. They passed on her because it looked too much like
Kate Beckinsale.
And then they put it out to Winona Ryder. Uh-huh. And as they were waiting for Winona Ryder's confirmation about whether or not she wanted to do it, his editor was like, "You should check out Chloe Sevigny. I worked with her on Kids. I think she's like perfect for the role." And then they just like, I guess they just like crossed their fingers and like, well, they wanted her. And they're like, let's hope that Winona Ryder doesn't accept. And she didn't. She was probably shy. That was during her shoplifting chase. She's probably like shy. She's probably stealing something at a Barney's.
the version I heard was that her agent took too long to get back.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, probably because he was dealing with Winona. Yeah, she's like,
put that back. No, you can buy that lipstick, Winona Ryder. You
have
so much
money to pay for it.
Look, you
put
just got
back
your check from Girl Interrupted. You can buy all this stuff.
You're still getting money from mermaids. Put it back.
Those sweet mermaids residual checks. Isn't it fun? And not to deter so much, but I feel like there's like a generation of like kids now who like only know Winona Ryder as the mom from Stranger Things. Like,
wow.
When like watching auditions for, oh, I don't know. Let's just say I've watched character auditions for for comedy theaters in general. And like so many people are doing like just that Winona, Stranger Things Winona Ryder. It's like, she's so much more than that, guys.
Oh, no.
Like,
She was the girl.
Yeah.
She was Tim Burton's girl.
Yeah.
She was Girl Interrupted.
She was Girl Interrupted.
She was Reality Bites.
She was Roxy Hart.
She was Short Hair.
She was, what else was she? She was other, yeah.
She was hanging out with Courtney Love.
It's true, I think.
Okay, so this movie, I'm just going to go through the plot.
Let's go through it.
Okay, so it starts off with this this disco that's hard to get into.
Yes, which they never officially name. It's always just the club.
Yeah, yeah. It took me a while to notice that they never mentioned the name of the club.
Yeah, I think the same thing with the publishing house they work for. They only refer to it as like the company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's so funny. Okay, so there's they keep mentioning a club, like, oh, this place is great. It's hard to get into.
Yeah.
A couple of times I had that teacher's note in my mind of being like, show, don't
just
say.
Show it. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of times when they're like, this place is great. And I'm like, just show how it's great.
Yeah.
Don't keep saying how it's great. And they show all these different people trying to get into the club. Dez, the character of Dez, you see him pseudo come out of the closet.
Well, he's not gay, but you don't know that when you see that first scene.
Yeah, because he's telling a woman that's like heartbroken over him that he's gay.
But that turns out to be just
a cover
he uses to break up with women and not feel guilty about and not like have them hate him.
Yeah,
you just say he's like, oh, I just realized I was gay, and that gives him that morally absolved him of dumping them.
And there's a guy who works in marketing named Jimmy.
Yeah,
who's trying to bring clients into a disco.
Yes,
which I feel like, is strange, but...
I think that was, like...
Was that a thing?
I think that was a thing, like, because, I mean, the club is very specifically based on Studio... Is it supposed to be Studio 54? It's supposed to be Studio 54. I mean, okay. Stillman talked about a lot about, like, going there in, like, the, like, you know... late 70s, early 80s. And I mean, I think that was a thing. I think it was like a big, like, studio. If you were like a client coming to New York City, it was like a big deal to get into Studio 54. So yeah, if you want to, like, I mean, like, do you remember, like, I feel like that was a thing in, like, Mad Men. Remember in Mad Men, like, there would be specifically people at the agency who are there to, like, wine and dine clients when they come to town. And I think in, like, New York City that day, yeah, it was like, if you wanted to feel really cool, you went back to wherever and said, like, hey, I got into Studio 54.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because the client that he's with is, like, older.
He's like an old man. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that him, they're going to, like, 50, like, 54 is, like, strange to me. But
yeah.
I'm not in marketing. So
you don't, what, you don't think you're, like, when you're older, you're going to be like, get me to those hot clubs.
I'm not like that now.
I know. When you're going to grow into it, when you mature, you're going to be like, I need to get into those hot clubs.
But they don't let him in because of his clothes.
Yeah.
And they also specifically don't like Jimmy because, they say, bless you, they say that he brings in clients.
Yeah.
And I didn't, do they feel like that's tacky or?
I think that's tacky. I mean, like, you know, some of this might just be like this weird world of like early 80s New York that we don't quite know about. But like listening to the commentary track, like there, Stillman talks about the fact that, like, you know, he was working or like adjacent to the ad agency, to the ad world in that era. And he was like, yeah, there was just like, people didn't like ad people back then. Like they were like kind of frowned upon, like they weren't cool. So they didn't like want them kind of in these clubs.
I wrote that. Okay. So this is supposed to be the 80s, but it looks very 90s. Everyone's hair.
Yeah. It was a very like interesting, like, you know, interesting stylistic choice, aesthetic choice for the movie. And I feel like they kind of like get into that, like at the end, like, not to jump all the way to the ending, but, the monologue, what's the character? I should remember these characters.
Josh?
Yeah. The character, yes, Josh, the monologue Josh gives at the end about how, like, you know, we remember, like, disco is going to be culturally remembered as this like silly, ridiculous thing that, you know, is all going to be filtered through the lens of like John Travolta and ice cream color and ice cream suits and all this kind of like aesthetic, like nonsense. And he's like, but that's not. And I feel like that whole, a lot of the movie is just saying like, well, that's for the most part, that's not what like disco in the 70s were. Like mostly it was just like these kind of like boring people in clubs, like listening to them making their revolving their social lives around it.
Because they keep mentioning how the word yuppies,
yes,
and how it's like an awful thing.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's like, why are you calling me that? Like, it's a bad thing. I'm proud to be a yuppie or something. Yeah. Like that. And I was born in 85, so I only sort of know the word yuppie, but yeah. I remember it being, you know, a bad thing.
Yeah, yuppies were, it was always kind of a bad thing, the yuppie. And, like, they had that conversation, too, where they're, like, no one identifies as the yuppies. How can there be yuppies if, like, no one officially identifies as one? But it's, like, they are kind of,
Yeah,
yuppies were, like lame. They were, like, you know, they were, like,
tools.
Tools. They were, like, Michael J. Fox on Family Ties, right?
Oh, yeah, he was definitely
a yuppie. He was a yuppie, yeah.
Okay, so the... And then we meet Chloe 70 and Kate Beckinsale's character. Kate, Chloe's name is Alice, and Kate is named as Charlotte. And Kate Beckinsale is trying to teach Chloe 70 how to be more vampy, which is adorable.
Yeah.
Like she'll literally say, like, try to squeeze in the word sex whenever you can.
Or sexy, yes. And by the way, like, I just... At the core of this, I love the kind of like awful female friendship at the core of this.
Oh, man. Okay. So Charlotte is like a bad person.
She's a bad person. I mean, arguably, like everybody in this movie is to some degree a like bad person, with the exception of like maybe Alice and Josh. And even they like have their issues.
Yeah.
But just the like, I feel like I know people I've always known people like Charlotte, people who just like will subtly undercut you at every turn. And I feel like I've seen that character like realize so well on screen is very like, I love it.
She's
such a bitch.
Well, here's my thing.
Yeah.
At first, Do you feel like Kate Beckinsale did a good job in this?
Yeah, I think she's great. I love her in this.
I feel like, I don't know if I liked her in this. I don't know if it's because of her character.
Yeah.
Or if it's just, I think in the very beginning, I feel like her performance felt a little flat.
I mean, I can see that reading of it. But I mean, I feel like everyone in this movie, you could like lob that criticism at. Like everyone's like a little bit flat, but I find that like kind of like is what the like kind of like what the movie is about, or kind of like the world we're entering. It's kind of these, it's to me, it's like very much this movie about like how what like kind of idiots people are in their like.
But Des never felt flat.
You don't think, like, I guess just, like, not flat, but kind of, like a little, like, one note, or, like, they never get too big or too mm-hmm. histrionic. They're, like, no one's ever, like, freaking out too hard in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my initial response to her, but then, okay. Then her character ups the bitchy ante.
Yeah, yeah.
And they live in female housing.
Yes.
Which was not a thing I knew about.
Yeah. Like, that's the whole premise of, like, Bosom Buddies is.
What, so female housing is housing where women
only women can live there.
So how is it different from another regular apartment?
I guess men can't get up. It's not other than I think like men can't live there. It was like, I don't know if it's still a thing that exists, but it was like enough of a thing in the like
is there like a price 80s? Break?
Yeah, I think you get a price break. I don't know for sure. My entire knowledge of it comes from Bosom Buddies, which was about, this was the sitcom about Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari, dressing up as women so they could live in the cheap women's apartment.
Okay, I didn't know that was the premise. I thought they were trying to get into a sorority.
Yeah, no. It's like they're new to the city and they gotta like and they can't afford anything but this women's only apartment.
That's so crazy.
Yes. So literally, I don't. Maybe it's not real because my only base of reference for it is Bosom Buddies. Maybe it's something they made up for Bosom Buddies.
I don't think so because they mention it in this.
Yeah.
But the
premise in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn,
the movie Brooklyn.
Okay.
That she lives in.
Okay. So three things. So, three movies references.
So okay.
I think it's a thing.
It sounds like a form of housing that's probably a lot cheaper.
Yes.
But the thing is, only women can stay there.
Yeah.
And they want to move out of female housing mm-hmm. so they can host a dinner party.
Yeah.
And they move into this horrible 3-bedroom.
Railroad apartment.
Yeah, like you have to cross through all the bedrooms to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's so awful.
Which are real things.
Oh, I'm aware.
Yeah.
I've seen, they have stuff like that out here.
Yeah, they do.
It's awful.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Yeah, didn't they call it tenement housing?
Yes. I think in the movie they like, someone actually says like, these were built in, you know, during the Depression or something for, you know, it was kind of like it was low income housing.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then like the yuppie roommate combos have started like pushing out all the low income families.
They have a dinner party and there's a scene where she's cooking shrimp. And
she just like dumps a big glob of like cream of mushroom soup
yeah,
into
it.
So
it's gross.
So gross. Yeah.
It looks so, she's like, oh no, this recipe is really fast.
Yeah.
She just dumps a glob of gray soup.
I've always wanted to try. I would be like, what? I've always wanted to try that recipe.
I was like, what are you making?
Yeah.
It looks insane.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of recipes that are just like dump cream of mushroom soup into something and it's a meal. It's a fucking meal now.
I know they do that for green beans and Thanksgiving.
Yes.
But I
yeah.
would never. Like, here's the thing. If you're living somewhere that's crammed with a bunch of people, my first thought isn't, let's cook shrimp.
Yeah. Oh, we chose, they bring in that, like, third woman, Holly
Lee, yeah.
Who is just, like...
Insecure.
Insecure and just kind of, like, shoved into the middle of their like, passive-aggressive, bitchy, like, constant roommate fight.
Oh, yeah. Like, everyone kind of says behind her back that she's, like, dull and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that don't date a Harvard boy.
Yeah, lots of don't date a Harvard boy.
I was like, I do not know what this world is where people, it's like a phrase like don't date a Harvard boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kate Beckinsale is, so there's like this whole side story where they find bags of money in the disco.
Yeah.
I don't know if I spaced out or what, but I didn't understand what this was.
I think it was just like it's about the fact, the, the the guy who ran the club, I forget his name, but the dude who ran the club was basically hiding money from the IRS and sending to Switzerland. And that kind of like, that like all tied into the bust at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Because like, I was like, I know they're lining up for a bust, but I was like, I don't, for what?
Yeah, they were just like not, they were just like not reporting money to the IRS. It was tax evasion.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I wasn't clear.
I think it's a real thing that kind of brought down a lot of
those clubs. Interesting.
Yeah, especially, I think like, I'm pretty sure Studio 54 had some sort of like tax problem, which is one of the reasons it disappeared so quickly.
Interesting. Yeah. And there was probably a bunch of people that are like dying for it to like,
yeah,
come down.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's almost like one of the reasons I feel like this movie kind of gets better on subsequent watchings is because he doesn't necessarily do the best job of like tying all those threads together in a yeah. very, in a, and so like, but you come back to it and you're like, the thing that you saw at the beginning kind of informs like when, or sorry, the ending now informs what you saw in the beginning. Uh-huh. So it's just like, I don't know. That's one of the reasons I think like it's a better movie on like subsequent viewings.
So you see everyone's story kind of progress. You see Jimmy sneaking in clients into the club, but they're full on dressed in Wizard of Oz costumes.
Yep, yeah.
Like full blown, like silver paint.
Yeah.
And which is clever.
Yeah.
And, okay. So Alice, she says this adorable line when she hooks up with Tom, who's played Robert Sean Leopard.
Yeah.
Leonard, not Leopard. And she's like, there's something sexy about Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
And I was like, Joan's going to love that
line. Yeah. I mean, like, so much. I mean, yeah. I mean, why does this movie appeal to me? It's like, there are three different scenes where they're just like discussing Disney movies.
There or Disney, are.
Yeah. Because yeah.
Discuss Lady and the Tramp.
And they discuss Bambi. Yeah.
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 But like, it works on Tom.
Yeah.
But Tom was good to go. Anyway,
I'm really going to say my one big issue with that scene is that, Tom is like, oh, look, I have original Scrooge McDuck art on my wall, but it's the size of a regular comic book page. And it's like, if it was a real comic book art, it would be like bigger because they draw those bigger and they shrink them down. So it's like,
Tom was lying.
Or Whit Stillman is not sure what he's doing. It's not as up on
whoever did art Carl Barks. Was full of it.
Yes, exactly. So maybe I'm looking at it wrong. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was just like a signal that Tom is kind of a liar.
Yeah.
Maybe he got some fake Scrooge McDuck art.
The reason we're hinting that Tom might be a liar is because later, Alice runs into Tom at the club.
The club.
And he's like an asshole to her.
Yes.
He's like, ugh. Scrooge McDuck is sexy. I can't believe you're the type of woman that would just sleep
it's like
with someone.
You were patronizing me when you told me Scrooge McDuck is sexy.
But it's just like, yeah, but it takes two to tango. What were you? You still slept
He's
with
her.
He's
a bad man. Tom's not good. Tom's a bad man.
Yeah. And then later on, you find out, well, this scene also sucks when they're ordering drinks and Alice says she just wants a Coke.
Yeah.
And then Charlotte goes full blown.
Like, calls her out for having the clap.
Yeah, she's like, why aren't you drinking?
Yeah.
Is it because you were taking medicine earlier? Do you have a VD, Charlotte? Yeah. You have a VD.
Yeah.
Is it the clap? And she yells this at the club. And Alice
is like, I'm sure I'm right.
It's so strange and so forced.
Yeah.
And so Alice is understandably upset. And you see her confront. But the thing is, she's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's right.
And so you see Alice have dinner with Tom and you find out that Tom was her first.
Yeah, basically.
Which is so sad.
Yeah. And you don't want Tom to be your first.
Yeah. Tom sucks.
Yeah.
And then.
He also gave her.
Herpes.
She doesn't know yet, but she also has herpes.
Yeah. So he gave her. He's like, I can't believe I gave you the G and the H. And she's like, the H.
Yeah.
God. So gonorrhea and herpes from the first person you sleep with.
Yeah.
And he's like, isn't he trying to get back with his wife or something?
Or his like long-term girlfriend.
Yeah. So this guy sucks. Okay. I wrote down Charlotte is a dumb know-it-all. She says someone has a gay mouth.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a character, the character Des, who keeps lying about coming out of the closet to women. And she says, and then during conversation, Charlotte's like, I can tell if someone's gay.
Yeah.
And Des is like, can you tell if I'm gay? And she's like, well, you have a gay mouth.
Yeah. That's very like 90s-ish, like discussion of like homosexuality in 90s indie films. Like, that's pretty on par. But I mean, like, let me, like, I think it's, not to sidetrack too much, but one of the things that that interests me about the movie is that it is a, you know, it's a movie about the disco scene, which was, you know, very heavily influenced by, or at least the music was very heavily influenced by, like, queer culture and by, like, and Black culture. And, like, there's not one queer character in the movie, and mm-hmm. there's not one, like, there are people of color on screen, but not one of them has a speaking line. Mm-hmm. And I think to some extent the movie is aware of that. Like, I think, you know, like in that scene you're describing, Charlotte has a line where she's like, you know, you're not fit to lick the boots of my real gay friends, but we never actually see her with a gay friend.
Oh yeah, you never meet these gay friends.
You never meet them. And I think that's kind of like, I think, you know, I think Stillman's level of satire is like super duper duper subtle, but like, you know, I think it's intentional that like she says, you know, she's a white woman who's like, I have gay friends. I mm-hmm. have, she'd probably also tell you she has like Black friends, but you never actually see them. Yeah. And I even think it's kind of intentional at the end when they're all talking about the herpes epidemic that's breaking out, when we in our head as viewers know that like this is, you're talking about this at the time like of the AIDS crisis. Yeah. So it is kind of a, like, you know, to me it's very much about how, like, you know, people in their 20s make everything about themselves, and they're struggling to make themselves feel like important in the world, and they're, even when they're just like idiots who go off about, you know, Lady of the Tramp or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's very much to me, like, I don't know, I wanted to ask you, like, how do you feel about the fact that they're like, you know, there are no gay characters in the movie. And even though they talk about it a lot, to me, that's like kind of the one of the points. But like, I'm just curious how you felt about it on first viewing.
I don't know. I felt okay. It felt like witnessing Woodstock through the eyes of someone who was not a hippie.
Yes, yeah. Which I think is like kind of like what the movie is. It's, you know, he talked, like, I've heard Stillman once talk about the fact that, you know, he's like, you know, you can go to these clubs, like, when you hear the stories of these clubs, there are all these like crazy stories.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you were just a normal person there, you didn't see any of this crazy stuff. It was just like, he literally said you were talking to the other boring people at the club. And like, that's kind of what he made a movie about.
Yeah. He was just about someone who was a fan of disco.
Yeah.
But not necessarily like Mick Jagger or.
No.
Because the thing is, you do see people at the club dressed up. Yeah. You see gay characters.
Yeah. But they're all like on the outskirts. You see people in drag.
Yeah.
You see, there are lots of like, you know.
There's someone, a lot of people dressed up as in silver.
Yes, yeah, all painted all silver.
Yeah.
And obviously the Wizard of Oz stuff is all very, you know, queer. And but it's like you never see, I don't think there's like one actual discussion in the movie about disco music. Like they talk about it as a concept, but they never talk about like a specific artist they like. They never talk about a specific song they like.
Yeah.
They talk more about when they're talking about specific pop culture, there's more discussions about like Disney stuff than there is about disco music.
Yeah, like Charlotte talks about the movie Lady and the Tramp because she said she took her niece or whatever to go see it, and she's like, it made me want to have kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like, okay, so Charlotte's basically a yuppie.
Yes. I think there's an argument that everyone in the movie is a yuppie.
I think they're all basically yuppies. And, okay, so Charlotte and Alice kind of have it out.
Yeah.
And I think this is after the VD blowout. And Charlotte reveals, like, I've never had female friends.
Yeah.
Like, I always end up turning on
this
them.
That's why this time in my life has been so important to me. It's my first female. You're my first female friends.
Yeah. She was like awful. And then Alice just keeps taking it.
Yeah.
So they keep staying together.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me, but.
I don't know. I feel like I know friendships like that that are like toxic and yet people just keep coming back to them. I feel like maybe I was in friendships like that, especially in my 20s.
I wonder, maybe she's just good at partying, because I feel like those people manage to stick it out.
Yes.
We'll have people stick it out for toxic friendships.
Yeah. And I also think, like, to some extent, like, Alice, like, admires Charlotte a little bit, because there's obviously like difference in levels of experience and kind of like social lives that they've had. And I think like, you know, Alice is still kind of like, even though she recognizes that Charlotte is kind of a awful person, she still like clings to that a little bit.
Yeah.
And like, you know, having someone to go with a club with is special.
Alice does start to stand up for herself a little bit.
Yeah.
And they start discussing Lady and the Tramp, and they have a really intense discussion about it. And that's, I think that's one of the, you see the character Josh really show his, bless you.
Thank you.
You see the character Josh, who is a DA.
Yeah.
Start to express feelings for Alice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he does it in a way that feels very obvious. But then Dez, for some reason, has started dating Alice.
Yeah. I mean, like, everyone kind of, like, bounces around between each other in this movie. Like, there's a lot of, like, just, like, I'm dating this person, and then, like, you'll cut to, like 3 months later, and they'll be dating someone else, and they'll be dating someone else, or, like, what is it? Like, Jimmy, like, they don't even acknowledge, like, really address the fact that, like, there's a big time jump, and then, like, Jimmy's moved into their railroad apartment.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, and then, okay, so Jimmy and Charlotte are a
dating,
thing.
Dating, yeah, yeah.
And then Charlotte thinks she's pregnant.
Yes.
And then there's this whole thing comes out of nowhere where she, I think, has a miscarriage.
No, I don't think she had a, I don't think she had a miscarriage.
Charlotte?
Did she have a miscarriage? Did she?
Well, she ended up in the hospital.
I thought it was just her. Maybe I'm dumb. Maybe I just thought it was like literally like her back, but like, because they say it's her back, but because she said, they said she had her period. I think you're right. I think it was, maybe it was a miscarriage.
Okay, because they talk about, because Jimmy talks about another time he was with a girl who ended up having a miscarriage.
That's right. Okay, yes, you're right.
Yeah, so I think Jimmy just keeps getting girls pregnant, and they keep end up having miscarriages, and he keeps bouncing.
Yeah.
And so Jimmy wants to leave because she had a miscarriage, I guess.
Yeah.
And, oh, I had a question. Okay, so Alice is with Charlotte in the hospital. And Charlotte's, you know, she's a bitch. So she's just like, did Jimmy say that he liked you more?
Yeah.
And is that why he left? And Alice's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that didn't happen though.
In the movie, like in the scene prior, I mean, I think like that is like Alice exaggerating to like kind of like get back at her a little bit. But in this, like there was a scene prior where like Jimmy is like coming into pack and Charlotte is like, and like Jimmy's like, I used to be like infatuated, or no, Alice is like,
I used to be infatuated with you.
And Jimmy's like, are you still infatuated? Like he kind of like asked her like, is that still a thing that could happen?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no. So I think that's like what she kind of like grew into, like, yeah, who's into me? Which I guess he kind of is.
No, I feel like she said that just to get back at her.
Maybe, but I think it like came from, maybe, but the point is like, whether it's whether she took it out of nowhere or it's exaggerated, I think it was like, that's clearly her being like, all right, like I've been enduring this for a long time. I'm going to like give it back to you a little bit. I'm going to like undercut you a little bit.
I mean, it was very easy to do.
Yeah.
Because Jimmy was gone either way.
Yes.
And I don't know. I thought it was funny, but yeah. That was funny. And Charlotte bursts into tears.
Yeah.
And
she's like, get out of my hospital.
Yeah. She's like, oh, what does she say? She's like, okay, she's so shitty in that she does this thing where she'll take something and spread it into a generality.
Yeah.
Where she'll be like, I guess disco isn't what it used to be, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. She's very like, she makes big blanket statements that seem innocuous, but they're very much designed to like pinpoint, to like target someone in the room.
Yeah, she's like, wow, I can't believe you're obsessing over this.
Yeah.
Or when a guy tries to flirt with Alice at the club, like Charlotte comes in, she's like, we came as a group.
Yeah, and then like, and then later she like pairs on,
she ditches her.
Yeah,
her
she's
guy.
Like, I think being a group is so like, she's very into like group dynamics, like all this, not all this like pairing off, and then she pairs off the second she can.
And then Alice is like, what happened to we came as a group? She's like, it's late.
Yeah, it's like, it's like midnight. It's getting late.
Yeah, she sucks.
Yeah.
She sucks so hard, so I'm glad Chloe was just like, yeah, he said he loved me more, and if he couldn't have me, he was gonna leave, so yeah. And then, let's see. Dez is a cokehead now.
Yeah.
And Oh, and then it cuts to footage on the news of Disco Records being burned.
Yes, yes. Which I don't know. Was that a new? Did you know about that? Was
no.
That was a real thing that happened and like signaled this the death of disco. I forget what I want to say.
It was on a field of some sort.
Yeah, it was a baseball game. I think I want to say it was in Philadelphia, but I don't know for sure. But yeah, that was a big thing in like the early 80s. They like trashed. They had like a disco sucks night where they were gonna like at the halftime gonna like light Disco Records on fire, and it turned into like a riot.
Wow,
That's actually one of the touches I don't necessarily like love about the movie, like that cutting that footage, because I feel like I like that so much. The movie kind of takes place in, you know, they say the very early 90s, 80s, but you can't really like place it specifically. It's kind of just like, you know, the general time and place, and mm-hmm. and like that locks it into that event locks it into like a timeline so specifically that I'm like, I think he could have gotten away with like showing that like disco is dying without cutting to this footage of this real thing that happened.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know that was a thing, so I guess I appreciated it.
Yeah, it's nice to learn things when you go to the movies.
Learning's fun.
Learning is fun.
Okay, so the cops swarm the disco.
Yeah.
And it's done in a really ad hoc way where Josh, he stops protecting them because he has feelings for Alice.
Yeah, yeah. It's like he stops protecting them. Yeah, basically. Yeah, you said it right. He has feelings for Alice. So, well, he tries to get off the case when he realizes Dez is dating Alice, and he's like, I have a conflict of interest now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, it's fine. And then it's kind of not really resolved. He's just kind of like, okay. Like, they're like, it's fine. And then he still busts the club.
Yeah. And they're like, just like, hide all your gifts.
Yeah.
All the coke that he's been getting as gifts. Yeah. And then you see the owner of the club try and hide some documents badly because they find him right away. And as he opens the documents, a bunch of baggies of coke fall out.
Yeah.
So that's the end of this discotheque. And Dez, who says he's not a coke addict and that he just gets it as a gift.
Yeah.
You see him at a diner and he's like, is it true coffee has the same effect as coke? And he snorts his coffee.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's a liquid. So it's an insane thing to watch.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing.
Yeah, like snorting coffee. It's as awful as it sounds.
Yeah.
I wrote down, these people are not friends. Because one of them, when he finds out Josh has feelings for Alice, he's like, well, he's, you know, manic depressive.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. That's like the kind of like mirrors the clap scene his friends are just like, okay, I'm going to like divulge that you had a mental breakdown in college and just to like fuck you over.
Yeah, you know, it's genetic, yeah, you know. Yeah. You don't want your kids getting that, do you?
Yeah.
It's so fucked up. And it's so sad. Like he's so ashamed of it. And he has like, they have this very intense conversation that feels very much like a book when they're walking, and I want to assume it's Central Park.
Yes, where they're talking about are you talking about the conversation where he's like, she's like, why does he call you loony?
Yeah. Does she really not know why he calls him loony?
I guess not. I don't know. Is that a thing? Maybe that wasn't as, I don't know when that particular bit of like slang came into prominence. So, I don't know.
Why does he call you loony? He's like, oh, that's just because, like, crazy. And I'm like, why would you let someone call you that?
Yeah.
It's very strange.
But he says because he likes the bird too.
Yeah, but that's not why the person calls him that.
I know. Take it up with him.
I'm gonna yell at you, Dez. Oh, and then someone goes to a pharmacist, and the pharmacist hands the meds, and they say sorry.
Yeah, and I think that was her herpes medication. I think that's to signify that like, oh, the herpes have finally like, she's finally. They kicked in. Her herpes kicked in. That was herpes medication.
But would a pharmacist really be like sorry?
I don't know. Maybe a nice pharmacist.
But I feel like for me, that was an insane reaction.
I don't know. Like it was the 80s. Like it was a different time. Pharmacists were doing what they wanted.
Yeah, that's true.
No good. Like, yeah, they were. I bet like pharmacists were like, I bet like all male doctors were assholes in the 80s.
They were just like passing judgment on everything they passed.
Yeah, I mean, like doctors are like, there's a lot of like asshole doctors in the world. They're not all Patch Adams.
Okay, so Jimmy calls Alice irritating, which he did in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And he never really specifies why. And that to me felt very much like, oh, this was based on a book.
Sure.
And
but which he did turn it into a novel 2 years after the movie.
I think that's so funny. It's the book that's based on a movie.
Yeah.
Odez and Jimmy leave town.
Yes.
Which is okay. So he's leaving town because the club got raided. Why is Jimmy leaving town?
Jimmy's leaving town because he got offered work in Spain because he can't get like ad work anymore in the States. So he got offered ad work in Spain and he went to Spain. Yeah. To go to Barcelona. Which was the Whit Stillman's film previous to that. Like, all the Whit Stillman movies take place in a little, like, shared universe. Like, there are characters from Barcelona. Like, the character who tells him about, like, ad work in Barcelona is, like, from the movie Barcelona. And then there's, like, characters from Metropolitan in there, too. He's the original MCU. I didn't think that he predates Kevin Smith's little shared universe. Because Clerks came out in 94, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Metropolitan came out in 90, so...
Well, this came out in 1998.
Yes. Oh, but I'm saying as far as like his connect, because Metropolitan came out in 1990.
Okay.
And that's when he started his little shared universe of like Woody Allen knockoff characters.
Okay. So Alice, it turns out you find out secondhand that Alice got promoted.
Yes.
For creating a book based about on spiritualism.
She accepted a pitch from a guy who claimed to be the Dalai Lama's older brother. That she got in trouble because that turned out to be a fake. The guy was a liar. But then she just said the book was okay. Now the book is about like self-actualization. It's like, you can be, I guess the book was like, you can be the brother of the Dalai Lama if you want to be. And then she got a big promotion.
And then she got promoted. And
Charlotte's not, like they're all, this scene is like, we find this out in a scene where like every other character from the movie is going to the unemployment office because they're all unemployed now.
Yeah, like Charlotte and Dez are unemployed.
Josh is unemployed.
But he's with Alice now.
Yeah.
And this is when he gives his impassioned speech about how disco was great.
Yeah.
And no one's going to remember it accurately. And then Charlotte goes on to be like, well, I didn't want this job anyway. I should be in television.
And my favorite line in the movie when she's like, I've been watching it. Like, my interest has always been in television. I've been watching it all my life.
Oh, and Dez talks about how him and Charlotte, their personalities are just too big for their friend group.
Yeah. They're both assholes he's saying.
Yeah. You're both assholes who got screwed. And
Yeah. You're both like shitty to people and like.
Yeah. Like you were part of a club that got raided. You're a cokehead.
Yeah.
And you got dumped by your boyfriend, betrayed by your only female friend because you were a dick to her. And, yeah, the movie ends with this really surreal but nice dance sequence on the subway where you see everyone on the train start dancing.
And then everyone on the platform is dancing.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, it's funny, it's like it feels like this whole movie he's like resisting the urge to make like a very like cliched, stereotypical like disco movie.
Uh-huh.
And then in the last two minutes he just like leans super hard into this where he's like everybody's disco dancing on the subway and it's like even looks a little more 70s-ish than like the whole rest of the movie or early 80s-ish than the rest of the movie has.
Yeah, because most of the movie looks kind of 90s.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know how I felt about this film.
Mm.
There's parts of it I really enjoyed. There's parts of it that made me laugh. But for the most part, I don't know. I just didn't hit that hard for me.
I can understand that. He's a very like laid back filmmaker almost. I just kind of have a soft spot for movies that I feel are about like how kind of dumb people are in their 20s. And I feel like this is like a very good example of that type of that movie. I know I said this previously, but just, you know, it's a movie about young people trying to convince themselves that their like worlds are bigger and their problems are bigger and their, you know, social circles are more important than they ever really are. And I just kind of like, I feel like the, you know, like Whit Stillman's very aware of that and while still being like kind of kind and loving to the characters. They're not like, I think you still like, even Charlotte, who is for all intents and purposes like a huge bitch, like I still think you kind of like walk away with the movie feeling kind of like affection, like some affection for her. Mm-hmm. That's the big reason the movie speaks to me. And also I think it is a interesting view, like especially like, you know, today it's a very interesting view on like nostalgia and how we treat like the things we're nostalgic about and kind of the difference between the way we remember the past and the things that we're nostalgic for and the way they really were. Mm. So I know that's kind of a lot of the reasons I respond to the movie so much.
That is very interesting, because when watching the club scenes, I feel like whenever you see a club scene for a disco in a movie, it always looks out of control.
It looks out of control. They're probably gonna have like people dancing in unison.
Yeah.
There's never any of that. It always looks like
everyone's in an afro wig.
Yeah.
Everyone's in goldfish shoes.
And there's some of that in the, like we said, like in the kind of like outskirts of the movie. But mostly it's just about like
people dancing.
People in suits who just got off of work and then they want to go dance. And
yeah.
None of our main characters are that flashy.
Yeah. Like it's people just looking to dance.
Yeah.
Just looking to score. Just looking to
do drugs. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess that's kind of a lot of what I like about it. It feels like, you know, honest about that, about the club scene.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if people, based on this movie, what other movies would you recommend for people?
I think first movie I might recommend is 24 Hour Party People.
That's a good one.
Yeah, Steve Coogan movie from 2002, I think.
Yeah.
That kind of covers the club scene during a similar period of history. I think that movie starts in like the late 70s and goes all the way to like the early 90s. But a lot of it covers the club scene in England during, or in the UK during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a movie that if Last Days of Disco was too kind of, you know, focusing on the mundane side of like these clubs and what it was like to be there, mm-hmm. that's a movie that really goes hard into like kind of like the crazy urban legends about these, like where it's much more in a like in a punk new wave world than the disco world of Last Days of Disco, but it kind of leans much harder into like, you know, the crazy side stories about mm-hmm. about what it was like to be be on the club scene back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I would recommend based on this. Maybe Party Monster?
Party Monster's a good one. Macaulay Culkin. I haven't seen that in forever.
Seth Green.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Back in like the early 2000s, that was early 2000s too.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else might I recommend? And then I was gonna say, if you want, like I said, I really like movies about how awful and stupid people are in their 20s. And I think maybe like an underrated movie from that subgenre is The Rules of Attraction. The Bret Easton Ellis movie
that movie.
Oh, you hate it? Tell me why you hate it.
It's awful. Everyone's awful.
I mean, yeah, it's true. It's like it's about like how terrible you are in college, and
but these people are like sociopathic.
Yeah,
and on top of that, the movie was trying so hard to be like a Tarantino film.
Yeah, because it was the writer and director was the dude who co-wrote. I think his name's Roger Avery, and he co-wrote like Pulp Fiction. Yeah, yeah.
That's, I hated that film.
I like that movie. I will admit I haven't seen it in years, but like, I mean,
I saw it when it first came out, and I was in college when it came out.
Me too.
And I hated it.
It's like much more like toxic a movie than like Last Days of Disco. Like, whereas I think I do genuinely think as bad as kind of like shitty to each other as the characters in Last Days of Disco are, like they are like kind of just like. Like very honest human foibles, whereas
yeah.
like The Rules of Attraction is just about people who are fucking monsters.
They're monsters.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm still that would be on my list. And then I'm gonna say, if you want to see like a disco movie that I feel like leans like is maybe a little more what you're expecting from a disco movie. But it's still like great and fun and full of like very cool characters is Roll Bounce.
Oh, is that with Little Bow Wow?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Which is like the roller disco movie. And it's much more of a you know, it's kind of much more what you would have expect out of a disco movie. You know, there's a big competition and there's like pretty elaborate like dance sequences. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's like a really it's a really great movie. Very like fun, underrated, mm-hmm. like little gem that not a lot of people saw. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whereas, you know, this movie kind of like Last Days of Disco maybe slight like ignores like the kind of bigger culture and issues that kind of revolve around disco music. Like there's a little more of that in Roll Bounce, and I really like it. And then can I throw in a fourth one?
Yeah.
If you just want to see like a really quintessential like shitty like disco movie from like the era, watch Thank God It's Friday. It's like trash, but it's like if you want to see like a disco movie from like the disco era that just kind of like captures the excess of it. I recommend, and that's another like a movie about like all these characters in a club.
Okay.
I believe, what did I read this? Leonard Maltin called it the worst movie to ever win an Academy Award for anything. Then maybe he changed his mind now about it since Green Book came out. But no, because it won for, you know, the song Last Dance.
That song
That's from that, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Donna Summer.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Just check out, find me on social media. I'm Joan Haley Ford on Twitter and Instagram. I don't really Twitter that much, so just find me on Instagram, Joan Haley Ford. And yeah, that's it.
Okay, and thank you guys for tuning in. If you like what you heard, you can subscribe or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Campfire Media. You could check us out on social media at Indie Darlings Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you and good night. Kate Thompson.
And I'm Mark David Christensen. And together we host Crap, a Hellboy podcast.
The show dedicated to the half-demon hero brought forth by writer-artist Mike Mignola and published by Dark Horse Comics.
Each week we discuss everything Hellboy.
Plus his expanded universe with the BPRD, Abe Sapien, Lobster Johnson, and many more.
That's Crap, a Hellboy podcast on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.